bonus.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. This is a Memorial Day edition of Next Fan Up, so we're going to deliver kind of a short show, maybe something for you to listen to while you drive to a barbecue. And if where you are is anything like where James and I are, there's a lot of sunshine. Now, I say that knowing that there's at least a 50% chance that James is in Abu Dhabi right now. But on today's show, we're going to do kind of the opposite of what we did last week. Last week, we made a lot of people angry by pulling aside all of the people that they love and care about and talking about how terrible they are. This week, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to find people, things, football-related that catch a lot of heat, a lot of flack, are the butt of a lot of jokes, and we're going to come to their defense. We're going to be the white knights riding in to defend those things. So joining me this week, we have Ken, our Chargers superfan. What's happening, Ken?
Nothing much. Everything's good in sunny San Diego.
Yeah, I'm over here bragging about the weather. The nicest day here is probably literally the worst day you've ever seen in your life there.
Probably.
And of course, my good buddy James, the Texan superfan, who does live in the area, but spends at least 50% of his life in the air. What's happening, James?
Oh, not too much. It is sunny and quite nice out here in New Brunswick, Canada, because nothing is quite as American on Memorial Day weekend as working in Canada.
I hope you're at least flying some American flags while you go everywhere. So we got a lot of response to last week's show, which is great. That's what we're hoping for. A lot of people told me I was an idiot, which is not unreasonable. And so, like I said, we're going to change things up a little bit. And so this week, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about things that catch a lot of hate, that for one reason or another, we either think is getting too much hate, we actually secretly like, something like that. I'll go ahead and get us started. I want to talk a little bit about Trent Dilfer. Now, Trent Dilfer is frequently a piece of trivia, or he is what we, you know, lobby as sort of the fact when we talk about how, you know, wins and championships don't mean much as far as a quarterback stat, which is exactly a point I was making last week when we talk a little bit about wins. And so, but he's frequently sort of lobbied out there as sort of the poster child for how you can win with a bad quarterback. The only issue I have with that narrative is Trent Dilfer wasn't a bad quarterback. He had a couple of bad years for sure, but he was almost, especially for when he played, he was about as average a quarterback as you're going to find. He, you know, in his heyday, he hovered right around that 60% completion mark. He had a interception percentage that usually bounced between 3% and 5% depending on the year. You go through, you know, most of his career, he threw around 11 to 15 interceptions when he played a full season. None of that is bad. That's all good stuff. He's been in the Pro Bowl, and yeah, I know there's a lot that you can say about the Pro Bowl, but people give him a lot of flack, and I just don't think it's reasonable. Like, I get that teams didn't lean on him that much. He wasn't asked to necessarily carry the team all that much. But it's almost a great injustice to his career that he was on a team with an incredible defense so that everybody could point to him as this joke of a quarterback. He was a real pro quarterback, like a top 20 quarterback on the planet. And even today, I think that you can win a Super Bowl with a guy like that. Am I wrong here? Are you guys? Is this the point where you guys laugh at me?
No. If you go back to that wonderfully written "What type of quarterback do you need to win the Super Bowl?" article that somebody wrote for our website, Trent Dilfer, coming off of that Super Bowl win, he ended up not getting signed by the Ravens, and instead the Seahawks picked him up at that point, and he filled in for Matt Hasselbeck, who got hurt or played hurt a couple times that season. And he qualified for the passer rating stats and everything like that. He would have been, I believe, a top 7 or top 8 quarterback in the league, you know, in those 5 games. The year that he won the Super Bowl, he was a top 12 quarterback across the board. He profiled mostly as like a like what Matthew Stafford has done. He played a very he came out of college didn't have well Stafford obviously had a lot of hype, you know, going with the number one overall pick, but he seemed to be kind of a slow developer. He won that Super Bowl with the Ravens, and he'd just been slowly making progression as a better and better passer. And then, I mean, it'd be unheard of to have a Super Bowl winning quarterback in this day and age. It doesn't matter how bad they would have played. They would not have gone unsigned by their team, or they would not have ended up being signed as a backup for another team the year after. And you could tell that, you know, Ozzie Newsome probably had that in mind when he handed Joe Flacco that incredible deal after Flacco did more or less the exact same thing Trent Dilfer had done just a decade later.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And, you know, if you look at some of his, like, accumulated stats for, like, total yards in a year, I think you have to adjust a little bit for the era. You know, he was, you know, flirting right around 3,000 yards, which back at that is what we think of as basically 4,500 yards today. Trent Dilfer, somebody out there thinks that you actually did a pretty decent job. Let's throw it back at you, James. Who do you want to defend?
So I'm going to defend a team in general, and that is the Dallas Cowboys. They're a very easy team to hate. I'm not the biggest fan of them. And looking at it, I'm not entirely sure why. If you're a casual fan, or even if you're more of a dedicated fan, the one thing that Jerry Jones does is he goes out and tries to win the Super Bowl every single year. Like, to him, a rebuilding year is not really an option. And, you know, Steven has taken over a little bit more of the reins, so you don't get the absolute crazy signings of, you know, the famous story of Johnny Manziel and, you know, Jerry having to be tackled from handing in the Johnny Manziel card. But, you know, the uncapped year prior to the renegotiation of the CBA, Jerry was one of the few owners that actually broke ranks and just spent and spent and spent trying to get a Super Bowl. You know, it kind of sounds silly to say that he's one of the owners that's out there to go and get a Super Bowl every year, but you can look around at the teams and, you know, obviously the Cleveland Browns have recognized they're not in it to win the Super Bowl this year. You get other teams out there that are positioning themselves. The year that the Indianapolis Colts ended up getting Andrew Luck, they clearly were not going after the Super Bowl, you know, starting Curtis Painter, I think, the last four or five games that year. And as a fellow Boilermaker, I will defend Curtis Painter, but he is not going to help you do anything other than get a high draft pick.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know if it's like an early 90s thing, but even though they haven't won a whole lot for a long time, I just can't help but sort of hate them a little bit. And again, that might be just leftover bias from when their team was like a dynasty and mine was a dumpster fire. But man, it's like I totally get what you're saying, and I think you're right. Many more teams than people I think are willing to admit are being run as businesses first and foremost, and as like winning organizations second. So I got to give them credit for that. But I don't know. I suppose you're right. What about you, Ken?
See, for me, the Cowboys are all about when I started watching them, which was like in 2006 when they had T.O., and T.O. was a crazy person. Tony Romo was just a fun quarterback to watch just because he always ended up in these crazy scenarios and was oftentimes able to pull himself out of there. So the Cowboys are like this just fun team that, you know, the Chargers never played them, so they were always the team that I rooted for in the NFC for sure.
Yeah, I think we're kind of in the same boat that way. All right, Ken, you're up. Who needs to be defended from all the hate?
These people get hated on more than anyone, and they have the hardest job in professional sports, and that is the referees, especially for a game like football. A lot of times the refs make the wrong call, but I think it's really, really easy to make the wrong call in professional sports, and football is especially hard with the way that the rules work now. And especially with player safety, the refs have had to do two jobs now, which is keep players safe and make sure that they call the game correctly. And it's just too difficult. And I know that they're able to do replays in New York from the NFL studios or whatever. But I think there really needs to be a Supreme Court of refereeing that anytime there's a review or a challenge, like it needs to be 12 people that we know, and then they can maybe write why they, you know, I think there should be more transparency with referees.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think when we watch the feed from home, it's really easy because we have all these great camera angles and we can see when they superimpose like yardage lines on the field. You know, when you're on the field, you're not at a high vantage point. You're not pulled out. You don't have this wide angle view. It's just your eyes, and you are surrounded by men who are 300 pounds, moving at unbelievable speeds, and you have to make these snap judgments. And, you know, I think that they get the calls right, you know, at least 90% of the time. And to me, like, that alone requires a tremendous amount of skill. I mean, the fact that, you know, you look at some of these replays, and if we only replay the plays that are the closest and the hardest to tell, and we replay every bit of those, and there's, you know, maybe one or two a game, and of those, maybe one or two a game get overturned, that means that on these, like, snap judgments that even in slow motion with replay are hard to call, these guys are getting it right half the time without the benefit of, like, all these crazy camera angles and, like, these composite views and all that stuff. I think it's definitely a thankless job. Nobody ever says that the referees did a great job. Every now and then you'll hear the, you know, them being praised for being, you know, not involved in the game, which is, I suppose, like a backhanded compliment, but you know, that's a job where you're only going to get hate. Like nobody's ever happy about any call that you made. Like if you have to say something, somebody is mad at you.
Yeah. The other thing is these guys don't even do it full time. Most of them are working as lawyers, and this is just their hobby. And so, you know, it's like they're taking time out of their day. They don't get paid as much as they probably should to make sure that we have a more entertaining, you know, Sunday. So I think it's, you know, sometimes, and my team got screwed by Ed Hockley for a game. Like we literally lost because of him and the Tuck rule, basically. And yet I still advocate for refs.
All right, so now I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on that, and I support the idea of full-time referees. Just a couple things about it. One, I don't think they're paid as poorly as you think. So as of 2013, the average NFL referee salary was $173,000. Not bad for a part-time job.
They're also in the NFL.
All I'm saying is I would do it for half that.
and the
other thing is, you know, when that topic comes up, the full-time referees thing, the only thing I don't know is what the heck are they going to do for half of the year when there's not games going on? Like, how much can you learn? Like, are they just going to sit in classrooms and watch film nonstop and then hope that translates into the season? Like, what would they do if they were full-time?
Yeah, I mean, you could keep a couple of them on full time, and then they could advise like the competition committee. They've become a little bit more outspoken, and I think they actually do have some full time referees now. But I mean, it would make sense to have at least one member of each crew be a full time referee, right? So they would sit in on the competition committee, so they could get a better idea of, instead of just being directed as this is what our points of emphasis are going to be, they can have a say in it, and it's not just a stance from the NFL or the NFLPA on this is what our constituents are concerned with, now go make it happen. They can push back and say, here is what we are seeing on the field. Here is where our jobs are difficult. Here is how you can make it better. And, yeah, I mean, you're saying that and Ken's saying, oh, it's the NFL, they can afford it. Not sure off the top of my head how many referees there are on the field at any given time, but at $173,000 a pop, that's $1 million per game that they're paying for officials. There's 256 games a year. I mean, $256 million may not seem like a lot to the NFL or to, you know, if we're going to spend the NFL's money for them, but that's a non-trivial amount of money for any business. The refs do get a lot of flack. I do like the stance of if they're invisible, you know they've done their job properly. I really hate the idea of makeup calls. and just the inconsistency that a lot of the crews bring to the game. It's getting to the point a lot like Major League Baseball. You can always name a couple referees, and that's a bad thing for a profession that should be invisible.
Yeah, that's. I think basketball might be the worst example where there's some select referees who really seem to like to be in the limelight and like be known for getting in the face of star players. So I'm definitely glad that the NFL doesn't seem to operate that way. All right, next one on my list is a player who I think, and it's mostly self-inflicted, but so here's a player who nowadays I think we mostly think of as a joke. We think of his time when he was a shell of him former self. But people need to remember when Chad Johnson, a.k.a. Chad Ochocinco, might have been the best wide receiver in the NFL for a really good stretch. And, yeah, he's a goofball. Yeah, he's like a weird dude who changed his name. Yeah, he went to New England and was just a dumpster fire in 2011. But so here's a guy. I'm just going to read off this. His total yards for a span in his career: 1,166, 1,355, 1,274, 1,432, 1,369, 1,440 yards. So here's a span of what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 7 years where he's averaging around almost 1,300 receiving yards. Like, Chad, I think he's back to being Chad Johnson now. I don't know. This is a guy who needs real Hall of Fame buzz. Like, he was on that Cincinnati Bengals team with Carson Palmer, both early in the Palmer years when Palmer was really good, and then post-injury Palmer, where Palmer really struggled for a while. And he just kept on trucking along. He, to me, is like the ultimate poster child of a guy who his on-the-field accomplishments just get completely wiped out by his personality and the fact that he's a goofball. And I think the other thing is people sort of lump in his personality a lot with somebody like Terrell Owens, and I think that's unfair either. I mean, Chad Johnson, as far as I know, never actually got in trouble. You know, he was pretty well liked by his teammates. You know, he didn't burn bridge in city after city after city after city. He spent his entire career in Cincinnati until eventually they made a move, and he played one last year in New England before retiring, which is not an uncommon career. That's you know, that's probably the next most common thing to, you know, trying to spend the entire year with one team is, you know, they let you go and you try and hang on for 1 year longer than you should. But his what he was doing on the field when it was like him and TJ Houshmandzadeh, like, you had two awesome wide receivers, and at the time, you know, they had what, Cedric Benson in the backfield. You didn't have anybody you could rely on for offense outside of those guys. So he's a guy who I think when we talk about the best wide receivers of his generation, nobody's going to talk about him because we had Randy Moss and because we had, you know, Calvin Johnson.
Steve Smith.
Yeah, exactly. But like, people need to remember Chad Johnson. He was a tremendous football player.
Well, I mean, I think Chad up until this year. Go for it, Ken.
Yeah, he's a fun player to watch as a teenager. That's what, I mean, like, again, the Bengals rarely played the Chargers, so it's easy to like Chad Johnson just because he was a lunatic and you never knew what he was going to do as soon as he scored a touchdown.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been nearly as successful as a identity because, I mean, he was the one with the wasn't he the one with the Sharpie celebration?
Or, no, that was Tio.
I think it was that. Oh, okay, that was Tio. I mean,
I think T.O., like people want to chalk up, like, T.O. has so many crazy antics that some people just assume that some of those must have been Chad Johnson's, and they're not.
That's fair, but I mean, like, what did the team do with him? And, I mean, he had this, he accumulated a lot of stats, but, I mean, so did, like, Steven Jackson of the Rams. So, I mean, maybe he was kind of cursed by being on a team with Carson Palmer and Marvin Lewis, but yeah, I mean, he accumulated a lot of stats. I don't know. The antics and the identity, like, I love it when players go out there and have a personality. But I mean, with
like
that,
Rivers.
You kind of have to, yeah, exactly, like Rivers. But I if you're going to do that, you can't just be on an average team. You have to, like, propel the team above and beyond.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, I think this kind of goes back to last week's argument about wins. And at this point, we're not even talking about quarterbacks. We're talking about a wide receiver. I don't know how much a wide receiver can drag an entire team to victory. I mean, he won a lot of games in Cincinnati. You know, he had multiple playoff berths in Cincinnati. But, of course, Cincinnati simply doesn't win in the playoffs. It's against their, like, team charter or something. But, like, I don't know. I don't know what more he could have done. You know, he was arguably the best player on a pretty good team for the better part of a decade.
Yeah, I mean, in the whole, like, Hall of Fame discussion, you're going to have a lot of wide receivers that are at right around the 10,000 career yard mark, and it's going to be a very tough call for a lot of them. You know, you're going to have, like, Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce and, you know, a lot, you know, even Hines Ward. I know Greg is probably screaming at the podcast, Hines Ward, Hines Ward, Hines Ward. But, I mean, you're going to have a lot of these guys that had relatively long careers or longer careers than Chad Johnson that are just going to show up as better to them from just a quick glance at the stat line. And, you know, Chad Johnson was probably – he was definitely better than Hines Ward. Whether or not he was better than, you know, like Isaac Bruce or Torrey Holt, you know, that's probably – the line where all three of them are clustered pretty closely together.
Yeah, and I think you're definitely right about that. I mean, there's a logjam at wide receiver that's just going to get much, much worse over time. I have no idea how they're going to figure that out. What's next on your list, James?
So next on my list, speaking of the Cincinnati Bengals, are teams and coaches that are perennially good but not great. And, you know, this comes up with, like, the Packers, any team coached by Andy Reid, you know, and you see it, like, when the Texans had Gary Kubiak, it was, okay, well, you made the playoffs, but you never really advanced all that far. Maybe you won one game. Maybe you got, you know, swept out immediately. And that's okay for the fans for, you know, 2 years, maybe three. And then it's like, okay, it's time to definitely change the head coach. And, you know, having gone through this in Houston with Kubiak, where we were just perennially, you know, okay, well, we're right at the playoffs, and then we're getting knocked out. And then all of a sudden, you're picking number one overall, and you realize that, you know, playoff football is really fun. It's really great to have, and it's a lot better than starting to watch college football around October because you know your team has no shot of anything except picking in the top five.
Ken, do you long for the Norv Turner days?
Oh, my God. Actually, I kind of do because we were in the playoffs at least. And so the last, like, 3 years, I've kind of stopped watching, like week 15. And that is way more numbing to have that be your week 15 existence than the Norv Turner 4-8. And we win 4 in a row, go to the playoffs, and, like, beat Peyton Manning when he wins MVP. So, yeah, no, I kind of do long for Norv Turner just because at least we were in the playoffs.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I know that this is something that a lot of people disagree on. And I, you know, the devil's advocate idea is that if you know for a fact that your ceiling is, you know, losing the first rounds of the playoffs and the point is to win championships, you have to make a change. And I get that argument, but I'm with you guys. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I just want to watch my team win. And it's definitely the most fun to watch them win a championship, but I would absolutely, you know, if they win 12 games and maybe a playoff game and get bounced, that means I still had a lot of fun that year, even if it, you know, and ends with me being angry for, you know, 2 weeks afterwards. And I'll absolutely take that over, you know, being 7-9 every year under Jeff Fisher or worse, or, you know, being a team that's constantly in that, you know, 4-8 win mode bouncing back and forth. I mean, I lived through that for all of the 90s, basically, and it sucks. Like, I think people take it for granted. Like, if I was the Cincinnati Bengals, like, I would have no problem extending Marv Lewis because he always has you winning in a tough division, and, you know, he gets you to the playoffs a lot of the time.
And I mean, you said it there that, oh, well, the ceiling is going to be you make the playoffs and lose the first round. I mean, that was the book on Gary Kubiak. And then he goes out to Denver and he wins a Super Bowl with what was basically getting built up in Houston, where you have a star-studded defense. You know, if you look at the year Peyton Manning had, you had a well below average quarterback. And that's even if you give him credit for all the mind games he was able to play at the line. You had a big, powerful wide receiver, and you had a great running game. So, you know, you look at what he was building in Houston. You know, you had Andre Johnson, Matt Schaub, who at the time was actually an above-average quarterback. You get Arian Foster, and then he was just trying to build that defense up. And every year it was just like, oh, well, we're gonna max out at, you know, maybe one playoff win. So, you know, you can say that your ceiling with Andy Reid is, oh, well, you're going to get one, maybe two playoff wins, but you know, at least you have the shot since you're in the playoffs, as opposed to a Jeff Fisher-led team where your only shot is a top five pick.
Yeah, that's always been the way.
I think people forget that Tim Tebow won a playoff game. Tim Tebow, at quarterback, yep. Won a playoff game. That's insanity.
Greg has not forgotten. All right, Ken, you got anybody else on your list?
No, we covered most of them. I'm a big refs guy.
Got it. So you'll be the guy showing up to the games wearing a refs jersey.
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right. Now, for me, the other one I want to talk about, and again, I know this is going to be an incredibly unpopular opinion, but I like Jay Cutler. I've always liked Jay Cutler. Like
Mm-mm,
I get
not
like
sorry, dude.
I know I'm in the minority here. Like his, you know, people hate his aloofness, you know, how up and down streaky he can be. But, you know, I look at Jay Cutler and, you know, his arm is as good as there is in the NFL. Like it just in terms of what he's able to do, you know, his ability to throw with zip off of awkward, weird, bad platforms. And in the small stretches in his career where he's gotten with the right people and kind of gotten right, he's played well above average quarterback, and I think he's always had that ability, but he's always been in weird situations, and then, you know, people point to his attitude. He's got this kind of sleepy-eyed aloofness, which, and it, you know, I've never followed his teams well enough to know what it's like inside the locker room, if people like him, dislike him, all that, but I find the whole concept of smoking Jay Cutler absolutely hilarious. All the memes of him on the football field with a little cigarette photoshopped half-hanging out of his mouth. Like, I get that people do that to make fun of him. That just makes me like him more. Like, is this like he would be right at home in like the Joe Namath era NFL, where he's got a big arm. Maybe he doesn't read the defense great. Maybe he doesn't have the best mechanics, but he can huck it, and he's fearless. You know, just wants to, you know, smoke on the sidelines and then go out and make plays when it's his turn. Like, to me, he's such a throwback. He's the biggest, like, old school throwback quarterback in the NFL, or at least he was till he became a broadcaster just now. And I've always found that incredibly endearing.
See, all that might be true.
Hey, Jake.
All of it. But if you pick a fight with Philip Rivers like Jay Cutler did, bro code does not allow me to like Jay Cutler. So that's why I don't like him. He fought Philip Rivers, and you know, come on, just leave Philip Rivers alone.
Yeah, Philip Rivers has enough to do at home dealing with that posse of kids. But,
exactly.
I mean, with Jay Cutler, it's like a lot of kind of middling quarterbacks. It's a lot like dating. You know, when you don't have a quarterback or you don't have a significant other, you start to look at kind of the crazy ones. It's like, you know what? How are they not with somebody, you know? And then when you have a good quarterback, good significant other, you look at that and it's like, wow, how do they ever get somebody? you know, he has some pluses, has quite a few more minuses. You know, the times will always be interesting with him. Right up until the point that they're not, and then you realize you've probably spent, you know, a little bit too much time with Jay Cutler, and it's time to move on.
You mentioned dating, but Jay Cutler has a smoking wife.
Oh yeah, he must be doing something right.
This just in, millionaire athletes have hot wives and girlfriends.
I'm hating on the guy, but I just got to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly have to give him credit for that. All right. Any shots left in the chamber for you, James?
You know, you kind of mentioned this one in our pre-show chat. I'm going to extend it a little bit further. You had mentioned Thursday night football, and I'm going to extend that to Thursday night football and London football in general. You know, yes, it can be very bad. They're still working out the kinks. If you look at a typical Sunday slate of games, the reason Red Zone Channel is so popular is because on any given Sunday at any given time, there's really only two, maybe three, if you're lucky, watchable football games out of the entire slate. And the reason Sunday night football works so well is because they're able to flex in two good teams by the second half of the season. So you generally get better matchups, which kind of masks how bad Sunday night football can be in the first half of the season, just like Monday night football. At the end of the day, it's going to be kind of a crapshoot. But, I mean, if you're looking at only two or three entertaining games on Sunday, you're probably only going to get, you know, two to three, maybe four entertaining Thursday night games. And that means you're only going to get one entertaining London game like every two or three years. It's just how the odds work, especially with teams needing to be given an incentive to go over to London. And that's why you end up with, like, the Jaguars and the Rams heading over there every single year, sometimes multiple times in the year, because those are teams, well, yeah, even with Khan over in the Jaguars, those are teams that are being run as businesses, and those owners see a little bit of an extra payday going over to London, and, you know, that's why they take that on.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And, you know, people point to on Thursday night, you know, things like, you know, bad football, more injury. And the only thing is and then we make a lot of sort of anecdotal observations, but I just don't know how much of that is actually true. Like, I don't know of a good way to measure how good football is. And sometimes I watch Thursday games and they're ugly slop fests. Sometimes they're pretty good games. And I don't know of anybody who's actually done, like, a deep dive study to see if there's any correlation between playing on Thursday games and injuries. I mean, that could simply be just, you know, we have an inherent bias against it, and we think that happens. The thing that I really like is, and it's very simple to me, I just like having another night of football, right? I can watch the NFL on Sunday and then on Monday, and then I only have to go two more, like, no football days before I have another football game to watch. And if you're, you know, a big NFL fan, which, spoiler, a podcast about super fans, a lot of us like the NFL a little bit, I like not being, you know, an entire week removed from the next football game, even if it's not my team. Just to have that to watch is really appealing to me. I understand that a lot of players don't like it, a lot of coaches don't like it, and I can't speak to that, but just, you know, there's so much hate amongst, I think, sort of the people who think of themselves as very into football, and kind of dialed in, which I think applies to us quite a bit as well, you know, because it's almost like, oh, well, you know, because, you know, players hate it, you know, I'm so dialed in with the NFL, I hate it too, and I just straight up don't. I like Thursday night football. I completely get the gripes and all the issues with it, but I still just like the fact that there's football on Thursday night.
See, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. I think this idea that Thursday night football sucks comes from the millennial generation that's online. And I just think that the ADHD effect of Red Zone, that most of these people who are complaining about Thursday night, they don't actually watch, they don't like football. They just like competitive stuff. And so when the games are good, they're like, oh, I love the NFL, but they don't actually love the NFL. They just love close sports games. So to people who say, I don't like Thursday night football, I say, well, do you like football in general, or is this just, you know, your Sunday tradition? Because for me, I like watching football, so more football is what I want.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement on that one then. Well, I think that's as good a place as any to wrap it up. Like I said, I promised a little bit of a compact Memorial Day show for everybody, so we won't go for too much longer. I want to say thank you to Ken, thank you, James, for coming on a beautiful day in three different parts of the globe, it sounds like. Ken, if people want to tell you that refs are fools and you're a fool for supporting them, where can they find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Kenneth J. Priest.
Perfect. So when I will send you a bill for all the extra editing you've caused me. And then, James, if we took issue with any of the people you mentioned, where should we find you?
You can find me at Boiler_James. And I know, it was Kansas City Chiefs, Nick, and I believe Greg and myself have been ripping on Ian Rappaport at the expense of a very fine wing establishment over in Connecticut. Ian has favorited or has declared the best wings available anywhere, and there are no sauce on these wings. They are dry rub wings, it appears, and that's not to take away from the establishment there in Connecticut. I'm sure it's a fine establishment. But it's a fun follow right now on Twitter.
God damn it. Ian Rappaport, can you do anything right? Come on, man. All right, so can we all agree none of us are going to defend Ian Rappaport?
Yeah, my mom met him on a plane once, though.
All right, and you can find me at Koreis, that's at Koreis. You can follow the show, and please do, that's at NFU Podcast. You can find us on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com, where some guy, I don't know who, put up this article about things like quarterbacks winning in the playoffs and Super Bowls and things like that, as well as a bunch of other content we post. You can also email us. We're still looking for a Lions super fan, and I want to say at least one other super fan, maybe... we're looking for a couple super fans. Email us nextfanup@gmail.com. And with that, I'm going to end the show. Thank you very much. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.